Hey, this is Matt from Slugge, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
What's up? This is Charlie from Psalm Zero, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell.
Hi, guys. It's Paolo from Hour of Penance. You're listening to Toilet of Hell.
This is Max Gorlick from The Mantle, and you're listening to Toilet Radio.
This is Jake Miller from The Mantle, and you're listening to Toilet of Hell Radio.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Hey everyone, Joe Thrashenkill here with your weekly dose of Toilet Radio. And we've got a great show for you today. Me and 365 Days of Horror got the chance to sit down with Liam Wilson. You may have heard of him. He's been playing bass in the Dillinger Escape Plan for something like, 17 years now. In just a moment, we'll get right into the interview. We're talking about the bus crash Dillinger sustained last month in Poland, yoga, Burning Man, and John Frum, his new band that features members of John Zorn and The Faceless. So we're going to go ahead and play a track from the new record before we get into the interview. This is Presage of Emptiness from the upcoming record, A Stirring in the Noose.
We'll be right back.
I'm Joe, and with me is Jordan. We're from Toilet of Hell. We'll be tag team in this interview with you, if that's okay.
Scandalous.
Please. We'll be gentle.
We'll try to be gentle anyway.
I'll try anything twice.
Liam, I'd say that everyone somewhat connected to the world of music knows you pretty well as the bassist for Dillinger Escape Plan. But you've got another band, one that's about to release its first record called A Stirring in the News. That band is called John Frum, which you have alongside Derek Ridquist of The Faceless, Matt Hollenberg, and Eli Litwin. And you've been working on this record for 6 years. How did this all come together?
Well, I guess it starts with my friendship with Eli, which I guess goes back to kind of Ironworks era Dillinger. His other band, Knife the Glitter, had opened for us there. The Knife the Glitter guitar player is now our current guitar player, Kevin. So I think that's essentially where I, really got to know Eli. We played together for like 2 weeks. And in that time, we realized how close we lived to each other in Philadelphia, like literally on the same street, just like a couple hundreds of houses away. So we just kind of built a friendly relationship that occasionally turned into us jamming. Eli was also, little known fact, was one of the drummers we were looking at when we were looking to, when we found Billy. So that was kind of where Eli and I connected and just realized how much, musical overlap we had. He had met Matt, kind of in the local Philadelphia scene. One of the kind of pitfalls of being in Dillinger is that as much as I'm, have lived in Philadelphia that whole time, I don't feel as connected to the scene simply because I tour so much. It seems like the older I get, I don't meet as many people like Matt. So Eli had met Matt. They had talked about jamming and doing some kind of heavy project that incorporated improvisation. So they kicked it off, wrote maybe 1.5 songs. And then in that time I was touring, Eli reached out to me. Sometime early 2012, we all got together. And, from there, it was like a pretty kind of slow but grinding, glacial kind of thing where it was slow but steady. And 4 or 5 years later, we wrote, recorded everything.
Gotcha. It's all coming together. Your record's record's dropping May 12th on Relapse. And how do you feel about the finished product?
Really excited about it. I mean, there's always, I think there's always a feeling of, I would do this differently. Or, I like to say there's like the Persian stitch where like you almost deliberately have to leave something unfinished so as not to compete with perfection or God or something. And, the term goes back to Persian carpets, and they would deliberately make a stitch off so as not to, to humble themselves. So in hindsight, because this stuff is 6 years old, there's things that I would do differently if I rewrote that song now. And there's certain things that I think every musician is sort of guilty of, where it's not like we've rushed anything, but we were, especially in the beginning, excited to write more songs. So maybe some of the earlier songs to me sound undercooked, because I knew we were just like excited to get to the next song, because that song was like opening up so many doors. And especially as you're getting to know each other, like I said, I didn't know the guitar player Matt prior to this, and don't really even feel like we really connected on a personal level until almost a year into it, because the rehearsals were so kind of serious, I guess. So it wasn't until we like demoed this stuff and kind of like hung out in a different way that like he and I connected and realized that we had like similar senses of humor and like things that just kind of seem obvious when you've been playing with people that just sort of weren't.
Well, that's interesting because Matt plays with John Zorn, and I would say that here a lot of similarities between the jazz sensibilities of Dillinger Escape Plan and that band as well.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, you know, one of the interesting things about all this is that happened like halfway through this John Frum project. So, you know, I didn't know Matt as that, and then that all started happening for him as we were, you know, writing this stuff. So then that influence starts coming in, you know, maybe halfway through our John Frum process. So, you know, him being pushed into a more improvisational way, him working with Kenny Gorowski and John Medeski in this, you know, I know the first record's called Simulacrum. It's just this nasty, like, heavy organ trio. And some of that, you know, again, kind of bleeds into what we were doing. So it was interesting just kind of having that happen in process and not necessarily like, oh, this is Matt from John Zorn. You know, he wasn't Matt from John Zorn in 2012.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, the name John Frum, you know, just a bit of Wikipedia-ing tells us that John Frum is an entity in the South Pacific, basically seen as a herald of cargo that would be dropped from planes during World War II, that basically the folks in these islands would try to summon these cargo shipments.
Yeah, and, I mean, essentially it was like, go ahead, if I'll let you finish the question.
So I wanted to ask you, what does that mean in regards to this project artistically? What do you want that to evoke?
For one thing, I think I want to let it tell me what it's going to evoke. You know, I know that when we decided on that name and kind of, you know, just kind of conversed about that idea and the name and just, you know, all the dialogues that brings up, I think it was kind of just like, wow, this is already so loaded. Let's just let it rip. And then once we did, again, like, that influenced the songwriting too. You kind of were able to, like, identify the muse you were working with, in a sense, which in an artistic way was interesting to be able to, like, actually put, like, a name to what, you know, whatever that external creative force is that's working through us. So there's that aspect of it. There's just the simple, like, you know, anthropological view of like how we are not unlike cargo cults in the sense that like, I don't necessarily know how my laptop works. And if it ever broke, I wouldn't know how to make it happen again. You know, like if the power went out, I'd be fucked in a lot of ways. So I think that there's just a lot of things where like, I don't really know where the power comes from other than just like I turn the switch and it goes on. You know, I'm not saying I'm that dim, but there's like, you know, a field of analogies out there. and just the idea of like all the funny rituals and things that we do, you know, you were talking about, you know, one of the things that I thought was fascinating about these John Frum cults is they would, once the soldiers left, they were obviously trying to bring back all their like the spam and food that doesn't spoil and radios and uniforms and, you know, engines and all this other shit. And so they start mowing down their forest. They have these airstrips built. They build wooden planes. They build control towers. They go out, they get flags and they do a dance out on the airstrip thinking that it's like the dance with the flags that brings the plane. When the reality is that the American soldiers were just like helping the plane land with the flag, you know, I mean, so their idea of what caused things, their concept of cause and effect mimics just human nature. You know, I think there's so many things that we do, whether it be like, you know, like I want to believe there's an afterlife and I'm going to, you know, go to church every Sunday because that's what I believe and it's convenient and it makes sense to me. So that's what makes me feel good on Sunday. This is what I'm doing. Whether or not there's actually any real reason to believe that that's how it's going to work. So, and I guess that there's just so many other things that, you know, maybe you could dive into just about music in general and what I think our rituals are and how I think that certain things have become static. And, you know, 17 years of Dillinger, like, I just want to do something a little different, even if it's just like one, you know, one nudge off. Like, there's just something else, some other like hole that I want to fill with musical caulk.
So what do you think?
Sorry for that little monologue.
Just to continue on with your analogy, what do you think will happen by doing this? What will be the result?
I mean, I guess that is yet to be determined. I don't really want to, you know, make this thing airtight. I want to allow there to be some serendipity. But, you know, for one thing, I think I'm really interested in exploring the idea of improvisation, especially live. Like I said, there's moments on this record and pretty much every solo section is improvised and probably will be live if not extended. So I think that for me is like an exciting thing because I'm kind of getting bored. Not that I'm not impressed, but getting bored with bands that do the same thing and every night and essentially just try to do it better or cleaner, you know? I don't really think that music needs to be that highly polished, especially not metal. I think there's like a certain rawness that, you know, or just a lack of risk. I don't really have the whole idea manifested, but I have big ideas about even just the presentation of it all. You know, I'm really drawn to, you know, like early Genesis and Portal and Sun Ra and I don't even know, just these bands that have some level of production attached to it. You know, I like kind of audience participation. I like, you know, especially with the improvisational nature, I would love people to even like come and, you know, just see it in a different way because every night's going to be different. You know, some nights it might fall flat on its face. Some nights it might be really transcendental. I have no idea.
That was kind of something that I wanted to ask you. Dillinger Escape Plan is pretty well known as utter chaos to see live, just a storm of physical energy. I was going to ask if you were looking forward to playing in a band that's maybe a little bit more controlled. That is the wrong word to use for what you're describing.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, there's something to be said about setting limitations or like deliberately setting them. I don't necessarily like external limitations, but I think artistically giving yourself like certain colors to work with and limiting it to that kind of, you know, opens up different things. There's kind of freedom and loss. And I think Dillinger absolutely expresses something that's like really pure for me. I've never, you know, I didn't realize how much I like need that on a psychological level. It's kind of like drama therapy to get out and just like thrash really hard. But even something like playing a Halloween show with Dillinger where I'd put on a mask or something, I was like, wow, this is a completely different feeling, you know, and it's almost the same thing with one small variable. And then it shifted the whole experience for me. I saw, you know, just the way people looked at us differently. And something about that was is fascinating and something I want to explore in some ways, maybe not straight up masks, but I don't know. You know, and just kind of like you said, just a different energy, you know, something a little bit more, I don't know, with as much emphasis on the live show, you know, I don't think that like Dillinger without the live show would have ever been as popular or as meaningful, you know? So I don't want to like discount that level of it, but I just think that the John Frum thing just to me needs some other level of production or presentation. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not exactly sure what that is, but if I'm asking the muse what it is, it just seems like it wants to be showcased as something else.
Do you see John Frum as like your new band or just as a project for right now, whereas you put out the album, maybe do a touring cycle, and then see what happens?
Well, you know, I don't know about what the time scale will be or the order of business, but it's already been 6 years in the making. Unless everybody in this band has a huge falling out, I see this as being something that will just kind of keep being, you know, contributed to. With Dillinger, you know, ending, it would certainly give me more time for it. But the fact that it's happening at this time is merely a coincidence. It just, you know, like I said, 6 years in the making, I didn't know Dillinger would be breaking up at the same time that this record would be, you know, would have a hole where Relapse can put it out. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to think this could be a bigger, greater thing. We're already talking about writing new songs. I think in some ways, you know, when something is sometimes 2 to 6 years old, it seems a little stale or not dishonest. But now that I know Eli and Matt better, and, you know, 4 songs in, we meet Derek, it's like, oh, okay. Now we can write with everybody's strengths in mind and, like, reflect on what we made and say, okay, where were we, you know, where do you really think there's kind of some, like, magic here, and where do you think that, you know, could be, you know, left on the cutting room floor? Like, where's the fat that we can trim? What are the new influences that we're going to bring into this? What is, you know, what is that, like, again, that external muse factor telling us it wants to be? I don't know. You know, like I said, we're already, like, really excited and, like, ripe with ideas of concepts that we're going to explore for new music. I just don't know how long it's going to take. I never thought this would take 6 years. So,
well, you've got some live shows coming imminently. Next month, April 14th, 15th, and 16th, you're doing a short jag starting in your hometown of Philadelphia. Do you have a plan in your mind of how you want the show to go, or is it you're just going to take it as you get there?
I mean, there's going to be a little bit of pre-planning and rehearsal where I can't really explain precisely why, but we have a, you know, guest headliner in mind who I just kind of have to throttle the announcement of for various reasons that will hopefully make sense at a later date. So that part of it logistically is interesting and exciting for me. But as far as, like, our presentation, yeah, I'm just, like, trying to rehearse. You know, we've been rehearsing more recently, and just trying to even think about everything from, like, set list to do we want lights, and you know, where are we going to open up this for improvisation? Do we want to, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to overthink it. I guess I'll say that much. I'm just, like, excited to play, and I'm going to let it happen. But there's a little bit of, you know, there's a couple things that we'd like to execute, on some kind of aesthetic level, even, you know, even dumb shit like getting merchandise, you know. Not that Dillinger is kind of an automaton, but there's just so many dumb little details where it's like, oh, fuck. Like, did you think about what band, you know, we're borrowing for this? Because I didn't, you know, like, there's certain things that I take for granted being in Dillinger, you know, and again, like, we're relatively self-managed and self-run, but it's just so, like, habit. And you still at least sometimes have a tour manager to take care of some of the logistics. Now it's like, oh shit, this is this is all on me, or this is all on us.
I think that can be freeing, though, in some ways. You know, you're free to go ahead and choose, like, oh, let's play in the basement of a synagogue this week.
Totally, it's charming in that sense. You know, and the shred shit is essentially like a punk house, so it's just going to be like a rad kickoff this whole thing. You know, I definitely want it to seem more like a party than a, you know, death metal show. I don't necessarily, you know, just to speak on, like, the general climate of certain scenes. I would like it to feel like inclusive. I feel like everybody comes to a metal or like hardcore underground scene feeling a bit like a misfit who doesn't fit in. And then to get into there and still feel like you don't fit in doesn't make sense to me. So, you know, I kind of want it to be an arena for your freak flag to fly. I don't want it to seem like a bunch of like people standing in the corner, you know, arms crossed or like moshing really hard. You know, like I don't necessarily think it should. That's not the vibe I'm going for.
I mean, high fives and stage dives, that's where it's at.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you, last month, you unfortunately had to cancel a whole buttload of dates across Europe.
Yeah.
Due to a bus crash. What exactly happened, and how did you feel afterwards?
There's certain ways I'll have to steer my answer just to hold space for any potential litigation.
Gotcha.
And also just making sure I'm kind of speaking from my own personal point of view. Like I don't want to get into how anybody else is feeling or, you know, felt afterwards. But, you know, of course there's like a lot of existential shock that goes into something like that. You know, and it was just kind of, you know, extra bizarre to happen in a foreign country where everybody's just kind of, you know, Polish is just like a hard sounding language. And when like there's multiple conversations happening in a chaotic scene, and everybody's trying to help, but everybody's also equally frustrated and maybe not thinking their clearest. It was just like a really strange experience. And then having everybody just sort of disappear to like different corners and different hospitals. You know, I was one of the last people to leave the scene. I was relatively, you know, physically, you know, safe and free from harm, a little bit of whiplash and, you know, but just shaken up a little bit. I don't know. I mean, the whole thing was just really bizarre. I think anybody who's been through an experience like that or any sort of, you know, traumatic thing, especially one that you were like asleep when it happened. I think there's something to be said about seeing something coming and being like woken up by it. I don't know. I think, I have a lot more respect and understanding for people who, you know, have lived through more extreme traumatic experiences and how strange the aftermath can be. And unexpectedly strange, you know, like just some of the ways that my brain tried to reconcile that situation to me seems like just downright trippy.
Were you, I don't know. Were you sleeping when weird. That happened?
Yeah. I had been up about 2 hours earlier with I had a really intense nightmare. So I was kind of emotionally and, you know, my nervous system was sort of like, you know, spun out. I fell back to sleep and then, you know, woke up to the impact. So it was a little, you know, I wasn't in the deepest of sleep and there was kind of a strange, you know, I guess premonition, you know, split seconds before it happened where, you know, I feel like maybe I heard something before I felt it, but I don't know. Yeah, but essentially asleep.
Gotcha. Do you have any concerns about maybe getting back in a van after this incident?
I think I'm more concerned about being concerned than I am. Like, I don't genuinely think it's going to freak me out as much as I might worry that it might.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say that in the sense that I don't foresee that being an issue, but I would hate to, like, get back into a van or a bus, be sleeping, hit a rumble strip, and have, like, a triggered freak out.
Yeah.
But I think that the way I deal with things and the way that I think I have a relatively healthy toolbox of devices to help me cope with any of the residual, you know, junk from stuff like that, whether it be like meditation or like I just kind of, you know, hit my yoga practice a lot harder after that, which on a physical level helped stretch my spine out and helped a lot. And then on a mental level, just like, just helps me focus on something else. So like those two things, which are already things in my toolbox, just became like, I just kind of sharpened them over the last month. You know, I've been playing a lot of bass, which feels really good and helps me feel like centered and grounded. I'm bummed that we're not playing shows. I'm bummed that, like, you know, in a sense, like my, you know, the bass that I lost was like my family, you know, it was like my old dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely like am mourning the loss of that instrument specifically. You know, that part of it sucks, you know, but at the same time, you know, and like I said, we were playing rad shows. We were like just, I want to say like Helsinki, maybe 4 or 5 days before that last show, we all kind of agreed. We like hit a stride. Like we threw a new song into the set. We were just like ripping it. And then that happened. It was just like, God damn it. You know, we were really like in a good flow. But, you know, again, coming home and spending some extra time with my daughter is rad. Being home during this John Frum launch, I guess, is sort of like silver lining on a, you know, I'll take it. It allows me to be a little bit more focused on how this narrative is going, as opposed to like trying to command this from tour 6 hours ahead.
You mentioned, you know, using yoga as a therapeutic process. How long have you been doing that?
Maybe 10 years now. You know, I probably like stumbled into a yoga class. You know, I think I can remember my first yoga class being, I don't know, maybe 2005, 2006. I got like the yoga bug around 2007, where I was like, I want to do this every day.
Were you doing it every day?
About, at one point I was probably doing it 5 or 6 days a week. There was a time where I was like interning at a Bikram studio, basically like doing all the laundry and kind of cleaning the studio. And then I would get, you know, like a month membership for like $20, or I don't remember what the deal was, but when I was there, I would get unlimited yoga essentially. And I would just like crush it. You know, I don't know. I just have a very immersive personality. Like when I get into things, I get like really into it, at least for like, until it plateaus off a little bit. Like I just dive the fuck in. You know, I did the same thing with bass. I did the same thing with yoga. I mean, there's, my therapist could go through a laundry list of things I do that with, whether it's healthy or not is subjective.
Do you have any, just cause I was reading about this the other day and I found it fascinating. Do you have any thoughts on, the founder of Bikram Yoga, what he's involved in right now legally?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on it, and I think, you know, without really getting into it, I think any earnest person knows what's right and wrong or good and bad. I don't necessarily follow that dude like he's any kind of guru, but I won't deny that his yoga and the, you know, the kind of system or the sequence, I guess you would say, that he put together and then adding the heat level to it, I can't deny that that is some serious ass-kicking yoga. And I mean, whether you even want to call it yoga, it doesn't even matter to me. What it does for me is mimics being on stage. I really think there's something about being on stage and sweating my ass off on stage under all the lights and trying to remember how to breathe and trying to remember how to play bass and trying to remember how to perform without like bugging out and being able to like throttle the amount of adrenaline that's coursing through me, and maintain some level of awareness. It's very similar to a Bikram yoga class where it's hot as fuck. There's people all around me. I'm sort of like mostly naked in some way, trying to do something that's essentially really uncomfortable, and I'm trying to like make it look and feel natural.
That is fascinating. I've never considered the parallel there. As a side note, how much water per day do you drink? You must be constantly sweating.
I mean, when I'm, you know, doing yoga, you know, or I mean, even on stage, like, I don't know. I mean, I try to drink at least a half gallon to a gallon a day. I probably don't always get that close. I probably, you know, I would say at this point, maybe half of that is coffee. but yeah, I mean, I try to stay hydrated. You know, I try to stay conscious of that. You know, being on tour, doing a lot of yoga, your body just kind of almost like you're pregnant and you need like ice cream and pickles. I'm just like water, you know, hydration. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, touring has also made me really conscious of that. You know, Greg is really conscious of that and has made me very conscious of that. Just how much hydration has to do with everything from your performance to your mood to, you know, just the way your body functions in general.
Hydration is the essence of swimmers.
I'm going to indulge. Yeah.
Jordan, before we get into this next part, is there anything that you wanted to add in?
I actually wanted to lighten the mood a little bit. A lot of bands like to name their fans. I think like Grateful Dead has the Deadheads, Megadeth has Droogies. I was curious what you'd like John Frum fans to be called. Might I suggest Frumbums or possibly Frummy Mummies?
I was going to say, and you know what I've been, you know, there's a lot of times where I like tease at this kind of wordplay or puns. Like I jokingly wanted the credits on the album to say Frums by Eli Litwin. you know, just like little, you know, play on words kind of thing. But I've, you know, if it were up to me, and what I would probably push more than anything is Frummers. Mostly tipping at, are you familiar with the Mummers Day Parade?
Yes.
So being from Philadelphia, I think that there is a certain aspect of that I would tap into or am loosely influenced by. So I would probably call our fans or like, you know, kind of like you said, like the Juggalos or the Deadheads or the Parrotheads, you know, whatever, you know, the Maggots, I would Frummers, but Frumbums is kind of cool too. You know, maybe that's like a certain hierarchy of Frummer.
You have to ascend, you know, maybe to if the you like, next level.
Yeah, maybe if you're like, you know, you go on, what, I don't even remember what they call it, with like Fish, where you like a legacy tour or something. What do you call it when you like follow the band? I feel like there's like a term for it that I'm not.
I even know a guy who did that. I don't even know what it's called.
Unemployed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
unemployed. That is correct. Like yes.
Frumbum. What? Yeah. I mean, somebody in the comments will fill us in. I don't know.
So we asked our readers if they could ask you guys anything, if they could ask you specifically anything, what would they ask you? Would you permit us to indulge some of these stupid questions that they sent us?
Sure. How many passes do I get?
You can pass on any one of these as you want.
All of them.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
What is your favorite What is your favorite episode of The Simpsons?
Oh. You know, I would have to say there's probably two. The first one that comes to mind is, I believe, in some segment of it, Milhouse and Bart have a band and Bart just turns into a total bum and Milhouse just turns to him and says like, "You've changed, man. It used to be about the music."
That was a flash forward. Yeah. Always...
Yeah. It's the one with Spinal Tap.
Yeah. I thought that was just kind of, you know, maybe before I'd even seen Spinal Tap, just already appreciated that humor. I think that was like an answering machine greeting at one time in my teenage years. But then I also having been to Burning Man, I thought that the Simpsons episode about Burning Man was like suspiciously funny. Like one of the writers must have gone or been a burner, and just the riffs on it were just extra zingy. I don't know. But I haven't seen a Simpsons episode in a while. I'm way more partial to South Park these days. No disrespect to Simpsons. I think that was, you know, a great wave to ride for the time, but I don't have a whole lot of time for TV.
Yeah, I don't think I know anybody that's seen an episode in the last 12 years or so. So,
yeah, I mean, that Burning Man episode was the only thing I, like, went out of my way to watch. That was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
So are you a regular burner?
I wouldn't say regular. I've been maybe 5 or 6 times. I haven't been in a couple of years. Having a baby, again, doesn't put a full stop on it, but just kind of I'm pumping the brakes on going back until she can wear a dust mask, a dust mask. And not pull it off in some kind of like toddler rage. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been out there a couple of times, and the last time I went out there, one of the last times I went out there, the theme was Cargo Cult. And that's where I kind of picked up on this whole John Frum name. And there was a black metal camp out there, and there were like really heavy, dirty, like D-beat-ish bands playing out there, which fucking blew my mind, because it wasn't necessarily the, you know, not to say it's a good environment for EDM either, but it just kind of makes more sense.
Yeah.
But to like have this whole other like community there that was like just as like dark and throttled as anything anywhere else, it was really kind of refreshing. You know, that's when we were looking for a band name, and it just kind of was like, oh, whoa. That could work.
There you go. That's worth the price of admission there. You get your entire band name from it. Another question from the fans. How many times would you estimate that you've suffered a concussion on stage?
Estimation, 0. I'm a Terminator. It doesn't necessarily... I mean, to be honest, I have like the most bludgeoning instrument up there, I've kind of sustained, I don't want to knock on wood, but most of my injuries have been to myself in some way, or you know, some other thing happening, like something tipping over, or you know, me just doing something stupid to my knees or my ankles or my feet. But yeah, I mean, collectively, I think there's been a few. But I mean, a concussion's a pretty intense thing. I don't know how many, maybe 1 or 2 collective concussions in the 17 years I've been up there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Would you ever like to do another record with Mike Patton?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty stoked to have even been able to say I did one. You know, it's one of the things I look back on and feel sort of jealous of myself. You know, I was 20 when that happened.
Holy shit.
So in a lot of ways I would be like, yeah, I would love the chance to do that again, knowing what I know now. You know, I'm a way more articulate musician these days. So sure, bring it. Maybe it will.
Is there a specific musician maybe you'd like to have on the next John Frum album guest on?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I would probably say, you know, a more, maybe some like ethnic guests. You know, just some more like out there instruments. But in terms of other guests, I mean, I'd be open to like, especially if we open up things more to improvisation, I would love to get other like guest soloists on there. I mean, maybe like Lisa Gerrard or like a Diamanda Galas. I would love to get like a feminine energy in there somewhere. You know, I did like 2 weeks filling in with Mirka when they toured with Behemoth in the U.S. Their bass player had to, you know, he came over, played one show, and had to fly home for a reason. I'll leave, you know, nothing scandalous, just like a personal reason. I had to fly home. So I was called up. I finished their tour, and, you know, doing everything that I'd been doing with John Frum and Dillinger, it was really cool to be on stage and have like a female energy in like a heavy environment. And then I'm also, I have like another, I shouldn't say like another project. I have another project with, some other members of a semi well-known band that I'll again leave sort of hush hush, but that has female vocals too. And it's a like melodic thrash band. So again, I really lately have dug having a female energy in a heavy metal context. Not to say that there isn't like Arch Enemy and things like that, but those are really like exceptions. There's not really like a really super strong female presence in most things, or it's kind of just, I don't know, ear candy. So I don't know. I don't know how to get there, but I think that something in that realm, like I said, like a Lisa Gerrard or a Diamanda Galas, or, you know, if you don't know who they are, definitely get on the googly.
Well, at this point, I feel like if you put the flag out there, you're going to get some responses.
Yeah. If you're listening.
we'll tag them ourselves.
Sure.
Are you a hugger?
Yeah, I am. Maybe even a little more so after that Polish circumstance situation.
That makes sense.
I got no problem with hugs. I'm not a free hugger. I'm not like an over hugger. But
just the right amount of hugs.
I'm an earnest, you know, hello goodbyer.
That's a good answer.
All right.
We've got just two more for
you. Did I pass?
We definitely. Two more for you. Who was the drummer that you feel like you worked best with in Dillinger Escape Plan? Penny, Sharon, or Reimer?
I would say Billy for sure. I enjoyed them all for different reasons. You know, Chris taught me a lot technically, and just kind of as a musician in general. Like, he taught me a lot about work ethic and, you know, just discipline and kind of playing with like a certain kind of fury. He was like a really kind of pent up, angry dude. And he playing with him taught me like how to really like crack into my strings and like get an angry tone and to let that part of myself come out. You know, the like angry, bitter, masculine Irish, whatever, you know? So then, you know, and Gil kind of taught me a lot about like having fun and like playing with sauce and just kind of like, he just had this like real natural, like Chris gave all the fucks, you know, Chris thought about every detail, and Gil, not that he didn't think about every detail, but he was more corporeal. He was like, he just felt things differently. So that kind of taught me something else. And, you know, it taught me a little bit about like playing with different sauce and feel and incorporating things differently and playing musically. You know, he just had like a really strong voice on his instrument. But Billy just has like a totally young fire and like just this like raw talent. I think Billy just like added the most to Dillinger, because as much as Gil played, he didn't necessarily write that stuff. A lot of that stuff was Chris demoing and Gil kind of aping is the wrong word, because Gil totally shredded the shit out of that shit. But a lot of it was kind of, laid out for him. Whereas Billy came in and like really set up his own vocabulary and like really took Dillinger to a different place. And kind of let us do different things. And I don't know, he was just like really fearless about stuff and still is. And is just like super hungry. And just on a personal level, like as a bud, you know, I've gotten to, you know, I know Gil really well too, but essentially my tenure with Gil was only about 2 or 3 years long. Mm-hmm. Whereas Billy, like I've been in a band with this dude now for like 8 years, give or take. You know, and our connection is just deeper, you know, and deeper on a level that it never would have been with Chris and maybe could have been with Gil, but this isn't. And that's something I really vibe off of way more in my like mid to late 30s or whatever. Dillinger was never like a bunch of high school buds. We were kind of like almost like boy banded together locally from people who knew that we could handle it. You know, it's not like everybody can play and tour. You know, people who can play aren't always willing to, like, just drop their life and go.
Yeah.
So it takes, like, a certain combination of people to get it done. And that doesn't always afford for anybody to be friends. You know, and it kind of took years for me to really feel like I was, like, actually friends with these dudes and not just, like, bandmates.
Hmm.
You know, and I think that kind of gel and chemistry just happens over time. And so at this point, that is just a really pure feeling with Billy. So, of course, I enjoy the, like, chemistry with him on stage more as a result.
Well, I guess my final question for you is, what are you going to miss most now that Dillinger is on its way out?
Man. Yeah, let me think about this for a minute. I would have to say, you know, on a sentimental level, it's probably just going to be like the inside jokes. And, you know, and because there's just so many things that only the three or sometimes two or five of us will ever get. You know, there's jokes that we are already making about this little Polish collision, you know, to sort of cope with the weirdness of it all, that I know we're going to be making, like, arguably for the rest of our lives. I can see these things, like, being the last words we ever speak to each other under certain circumstances or something. So that kind of stuff's weird. You know, of course, the adrenaline rush, like, you know, not that I expected to, but even if John Frum got twice the size of Dillinger, there's a certain kind of drug that Dillinger is that I would never get that same high any other way. You know, playing these songs, like, I mean, I put so much of myself into them. You know, there's certain things that, you know, you can't help but, like, sometimes get bored of, you know, when you've played a certain song, like, every night for the last 5 years, and you know your fans would be bummed if they didn't hear it.
Hmm.
Like, there's not as much of a challenge there as it would be if I went and pulled out some, like, deep cut. So I don't know. I mean, I guess just sort of pausing that legacy or closing that legacy in general is just, like, just all around strange. You know, I miss all the things that I don't even... I miss the things that I'll never do. If that makes any sense. Like, I still see and meet so many, you know, I see old friends. You know, the last time I was in Houston, I saw James Love, who played with us for years. And this time saying goodbye to him, I was like, fuck, man. Like, I can usually count on seeing you again at least once every 2 years. And I don't really know if I'm going to see you again anytime soon. So let's make this hug extra long. And cool, I'll see you again when I see you. So the idea that I'm not going to see certain friends that I only see on tour, especially in foreign countries. You know, I've made a lot of really close friends in like Budapest and Sydney and, you know, all kinds of places. You know, when Dillinger's not the boat to float me there, I don't enjoy that. So I guess that, you know, and then all the people that I won't meet, you know, I meet somebody new and cool almost every tour, and it's weird to be like, oh shit. You know, not that I don't have enough friends that I need to focus on anyway, but I guess I'm always kind of looking for the person who's going to take it to that next, you know, adventure.
It's the closing of one chapter and the opening of another. Your new record drops on May 12th on Relapse Records. Is there anything that you want our audience to hear before we let you go?
Like advice?
whatever that you think that they need most in their lives.
Oh, man. Shit, nothing is true. Everything is permitted. I don't know what kind of uncorny dismount to throw at you. But I guess thanks. You know, thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for taking an interest. Stay tuned. This is all, you know, just beginning to brew and still, you know, still exploring itself. So, yeah.
Awesome. If you're in the neighborhood, go check out John Frum. Thanks so much for talking with us, Liam.
Yeah, thank you.
That's going to do it for us this week. But before I let you go, I wanted to share one more track with you. This was released just last week. Fans of Sepetys or Piron, you guys might know Doug Moore. He just released a new record under the name Weeping Sores. And I listened to it. It's really, really fucking good. Brand new stuff. Name your own price on Bandcamp. Go pick it up. This is The Nature of Faith. We'll see you next week, everybody.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.